Welcome to Book Talk. I'm Sasha De Boyle, and today we'll be talking about Irvine Welsh's latest novel, The Sex Lives of Siamese Twins. In Sex Lives, we see the intertwined stories of Lucy Brennan, a sadistic personal trainer with her sights set on stardom, and Lena Sorensen, the overweight artist who catapults Lucy into the spotlight. Lena turns to Lucy for help with her weight, but it soon becomes clear Lucy will stop at nothing to help Lena achieve her goal. Described as everything from literary sleight of hand to fast food fiction, The Sex Lives of Siamese Twins has divided critics and fans in typical Welsh style. Here to see what they make of it are Scottish author Barry Hutchison and journalist and critic Chitra Ramaswamy. So when we asked our followers on Twitter about The Sex Lives of Siamese Twins, it seemed to divide our fan base completely. So we had comments about the book that said that it was brilliant, that said that it was boring, that said that it was amazing, that said that it was overrated, and one person who called it utter rubbish. So I was wondering, what were your first impressions of the book?
Well, I was quite disappointed with it, to be honest. I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Irvine Welsh fan. I've only read one Irvine Welsh book, and that was when I was a student. I read Trainspotting when it was huge at the time. And I have bought many Irvine Welsh books, and they're on my shelf, and will one day probably get read. But I kind of went into this with that impression that Irvine Welsh was, you know, a legend, and this was going to be great, and I didn't quite find it that way at all.
My impression of this book actually changed as I read it. I started off absolutely hating it and feeling extremely angry with the protagonist. She's this kind of hating, swearing, hugely objectified male fantasy figure. She didn't feel real. She just felt like Irvine Welsh in a dress. Speaking with an American accent. I found it offensive, to be honest. By the end of the book, though, I did feel the character had been slightly redeemed and therefore the book. As to whether that was enough to kind of make up for the kind of 400 pages that had come before is debatable.
Unpleasantness. I didn't think a redemption really worked for me at all. I just found she was so unpleasant all the way through, and there was almost a tacked on, but actually she's quite nice and here's why, she's the way she is.
It was a convenient sleight of hand on Irvine Welsh's part, I thought, so that he could spout a lot of misogyny in some ways, actually, and then at the end of it say, yes, but see, the reason for this character being like this is actually because it's another Welsh abused, troubled character. And he's really good at those characters. And actually, to be fair to Irvine Welsh, I think that's his stock in trade, isn't it? That's what he's really good at, sort of making us feel compassion towards characters who we, you know, whose society has not been kind to either. So there is a kind of social project going on as well that's valuable, and it has been in other books, but it wasn't for me in this one. And I think it's because he was writing with the voice of a woman.
I'd agree with that. I also think at the end she had been bad and had to be punished at the end, and then suddenly she was good, and that was how the whole ending kind of played out for me. And it just the whole book was just a massive letdown as far as I was concerned.
The problem with me with the sort of redemption narrative, like, I do understand what you're saying, and I agree with sort of Welsh's narrative in the past that he's done this with other characters to much greater effect, but with this, the redemption and the, like, look, they are a good person, actually excuses that behavior to begin
Absolutely.
With, and it's like, actually it's all right that they're a raging misogynist who's really, really awful.
I agree,
because see, they're happy now and they're going to be nice, because she's actually not much more pleasant by the end of it. She just happens to get her own happy ending, and that doesn't excuse that behavior. And then it makes me think about the greater, like, do writers have a responsibility to portray that in a more responsible way, or is he just speaking from his own experience and that's all he knows?
Well, I was thinking a lot while I was reading this book, because like you, Barry, I'm not a Welsh reader. It's been a long time since I've picked up an Irvine Welsh novel, and I too, you know, read this book almost feeling like I'd never really read an Irvine Welsh novel, because I was a different person when I read Trainspotting, in a way. And I wonder even now what I would think of Trainspotting, but it was so it was so exciting at the time, that book. But he's written a lot of novels since then, and I've only read a couple of them, but to me, I do feel like he has become a little bit of a parody of himself as a writer. So he has kind of continued to write in this voice that has served him so beautifully in Trainspotting, you know, all of that Scots vernacular and everything. It was fantastic, and here he's doing it with America. So this novel's written in American English, and I don't think he's ever done that before, actually. So it is a departure, and I found that voice to be kind of relentless and hating and violent, and, you know, she just spouts vitriol for 400 pages, and you do feel like you're being whacked around the face.
I find it really
by
hard to
a
read.
McDonald's cheeseburger.
I think that's part of his kind of trademark as well, though. Those books are difficult to read. I mean, Lucy, the protagonist, is possibly the most unpleasant protagonist than any novel novel I've ever read. I don't, just she was just horrendous, you know, and her redemption at the end was so twee and neat that it just didn't do it for me at all. And I just felt very let down and betrayed by Mr. Welsh this time.
I think that in the past, sort of people who have been arguing about, you know, Welsh and his use of like incredibly transgressive like acts and, you know, bad language and graphic sex and that sort of thing have said that, you know, he's speaking of his experience. It just doesn't come off as much. Like, you can't really use that argument if he's speaking from like a position of privileged American society, because even though he's speaking from the point of view of a woman and an LGBT woman, it's still like she's white. She's got money. She lives in Miami, you know. She's not exactly a minority here. And it does sort of make all of that vitriol fall flat, because you're like, actually, where is this coming from?
Going back to us as sort of readers of Welsh who wouldn't normally be readers of Welsh, when I think of who the urban Welsh reader is these days, I think of it really as a kind of, I don't know if this is true, but I imagine it to be a straight white man. Mm-hmm. And when I think of a straight white man reading a book like this, I do think, well, this creation, you know, she's in her early 30s, she's a bisexual woman, she is sexually voracious, she swears, she works out, she's got a beautiful body, she's got almond-shaped eyes, a trapezoidal jawline or something like that. And you just sort of think, I mean, this is a complete sweaty-palmed creation.
It's funny because in some ways,
fantasy figure.
She's been conditioned by her father throughout the novel to be that way, and especially with the sort of boys' club, like kickboxing, masculine traits.
I mean, there were quite a number of racy scenes in the book. I was almost embarrassed reading them. They almost came across as a kind of ledge man's fantasy of a lesbian encounter, you know, and it just didn't sit well particularly with me.
I was reading some interviews with Irvin Welsh today in preparation for the podcast, and he did a lot of extensive research for those scenes. Yeah, he went to lesbian bars to research the scenes and apparently was very surprised and like surprised in a positive way about the sexual assertiveness on show. So he's clearly tried to get that across in the book. Felicity said that he thought lesbians was all hand-holding and cuddling on the sofa. But I feel like there is more to the book than just that.
Well, it's interesting because we don't want to give too much away, of course, but there is a, we've talked a little bit about the kind of redemptive ending and what is kind of novel. And also I was happy to see it. There is a resolution for these two women that is positive at the end of this novel. You know, it isn't some psych lesbian knifing another woman who she's never going to be able to have, which is often how, you know, lesbian narratives in popular culture are represented. So at that level, I think, you know, at least it worked out okay. But on the other hand, you know, it is a stalker narrative for a lot of the book. And that, again, is a trope that comes up when lesbians are represented in culture over and over again. And frankly, I'm really tired of that single white female portrayal.
Do you not think that almost makes it worse, though, that redemption at the end? Because like you say, it is a stalker narrative. And both the protagonists are, without giving too much away, they kind of essentially stalk each other to an extent.
Yeah, there's sort of an obsession in the
verse. And so almost to reward that kind of seemed a, you know, almost a bit twisted at the end.
A bit worrying. Something that I did like about the book, I thought the structure was really interesting. I liked the way that he let the narrative unfold between like a series of narrative scenes and then different forms of contact, so emails between different people and then diary entries, some sort of computer diary entries. And, you know, there was a good switch back and forth between them that helped the story unfold. Did you guys enjoy that?
Yes. Actually, I do think Irvin Welsh is a good storyteller. He is good at making you turn over a page, and that is what it is to be a good writer to some extent. I mean, I didn't really have trouble finishing this book. It's not easy when you've got a protagonist who is so unlikable and is so full of hate that you do want to keep reading about her. And I think he does tap into something, this sort of twin pull between revulsion and desire.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the great sort of Welsh themes, isn't it? And it comes out in his sex scenes, which are often sort of, they're so gross.
Yeah.
Clearly he finds all of that stuff quite titillating, and a lot of people do. And this book is full of that as well. And I think he's good at it. Actually,
yeah, no, I would agree.
Also, I think one of the main themes of this book is Americans' obsession with weight and body image. And so, you know, you've got the very svelte, self-obsessed, narcissistic, sociopathic Lucy, who is the main voice of the novel, and then the woman who videos her on the highway disarming the gunman, Lena, and she's huge. And so they're the kind of twin impulses, and of course, you know, it's back to addiction again, isn't
it?
Thing that Welsh is obsessed with is people who are addicted to things. And in this case, one character's addicted to fitness and the other character's addicted to food. And you know, you never really get a sense of either of them being particularly healthy. It's all a negative comment on American.
Well, that was the interesting part is you don't really get like a positive alternative. It just sort of tears down both of them. It's like the fitness industry is horrible and will make you a horrible person. Eating a lot is horrible and will make you feel horrible and you will die.
Yeah, it's true.
That's where I guess I find there being a lack of redemption, because at the end, both of them still have that relationship with food problem. So the body image problem hasn't been solved. Mm-hmm. And if that's the main comment of the book, then
I think with Lucy, it has been, without giving too much away, there's something that happens with Lucy right at the end, which you don't actually see happening, but which causes her, I think she said she loses the weight and then she regains it a bit, but she doesn't mind now. Because of what's happened, the happy ending.
Well, there's definitely more of an understanding, I think, from her to do with her relationship with food. As in, she's more sympathetic towards the people who have struggled with their weight in the past. But she then also now herself is possessed of that unhealthy relationship with food, you know, at the other end of the spectrum where, you know, it's all about holding back and not eating and trying to change habits. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the title of the book. So the book is called The Sex Lives of Siamese Twins.
Yes.
And there are Siamese twins in the book. And it took me a while to actually figure out who they were, because that's the sort of not central to the plot chat. And so I'm a goldfish reader. I skim over that stuff. But halfway through the book, I was like, oh, those are the Siamese twins.
Well, I suppose he was trying to make a more kind of writerly point there, wasn't he, of comparing the lot of these Siamese twins who, as you say, are a sort of a news story that kind of grips America, this very salacious, sensational news story about these Siamese twins who are begging to be, one of whom is begging to be separated so that she can go out with this boyfriend and have sex with this boyfriend. And America becomes obsessed with this story. Meanwhile, you've got Lucy and Lena, these two characters who are kind of locked in this dysfunctional relationship. So they're kind of like the Siamese twins as well. But calling your book The Sex Lives of Siamese Twins is just Irvin Welsh trying to titillate and be commercial and be a bit clever. And also, I think it's it shows that he doesn't really like his readers much or something. I don't know. There's something sadistic about this book. He's trying to say to us as well, you just want to be prurient. You're part of the problem too. I found it, again, offensive and pointless and a bit hollow.
Right.
You have said yourself you're not a typical Welsh reader, and that he is trying to speak to his readers and say, actually, you just want this titillation. You want this horrible, transgressive, graphic, sexual, violent, horrible chat. Do you think that he's going there and making it so full on that he's actually trying to sicken his readers and make them stop and think twice about the reaction that they're having? Do you think he's that clever?
Surely a novelist's kind of first responsibility is to write an entertaining story. You know, and I didn't think this was, and yes.
Well, that talks about the purpose of fiction, though, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I suppose, if you want to go, if you look at the bigger picture. You know, I think he's a very intelligent man, so it's possible that's his entire plan is to make you feel bad for picking it up in the first place. I don't know.
It reminds me a lot of, I don't know if either of you saw a film that came out last year called Spring Breakers, and it's by Harmony Korine, and it is all about spring break in America. The way that it was marketed, the way that it was cast, it had all of these very, like, young, nubile teen stars in it, and it was all about, oh my god, spring break, gung-toting women. The whole film itself was nauseating. It was created
to
be
a
really,
well,
it's got James Franco in it, and it was created to be this really nauseating experience, and it was marketed at obviously that demographic that titillating spring break experience would appeal to, and the whole thing was horrible. And but the best part was that the story was terrible. The story was like really badly put together. The dialogue was improvised, and it was obviously sort of getting people in there to make them be sickened by their own responses. And I realized that that's not really the goal of a film, but it was really interesting watching. And I sort of, a tiny part of me hopes that this is doing the same thing. But I think the female protagonist for me is what makes it more problematic.
It is a departure, at least at face value, but then it's interesting, isn't it? Scratch the surface and, you know, it's just like another Welsh novel that it's about a kind of misogynistic, hateful, you know, it's kind of like Filth, actually.
Yeah, it is
very similar to Filth, where you've got, you know, your bent Hopper, actually, okay, Lucy may be a woman, but there's the same trauma narrative mm-hmm. behind it all, justifying, you know, justifying all of this horrible stuff. And the question is, does it justify it? And my answer to that really is no. How can it? Because you've got 460 pages of it. Yeah. That is the actual body of the novel, is the very thing that he's seeking to criticize.
Yeah.
So you've got to tread that line so carefully in order to make it proper, you know, really meaty satire. Otherwise, it's just pandering to the thing that you're criticizing.
Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is that he's speaking for an oppressed group that he doesn't represent. So, for example, by choosing a bisexual woman and then adding that trauma narrative, he's actually saying a really damaging thing about sexual orientation, which I'm pretty sure he hasn't thought about. Like, I don't think he thought about it. I think he went, I'm going to write a story about a sexually aggressive bisexual lady. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just throw in this trauma thing because it's what I do. But actually, the connections that people will be making there could be very damaging in terms of like representation overall.
I mean, it's not to say that, you know, you have to write only about what you know. Of course, Irvin Welsh can write from the point of view of a bisexual woman. But the point is, I suppose, you better do it really, really well and really, really convincingly. Otherwise, you are going to be open to exactly the kind of criticism that we're
dishing out.
I wonder what Americans would make of this book, because, you know, here we are discussing it in Scotland, in Edinburgh, you know, home of Trainspotting, and I'm sure our responses would be quite different to the Americans. I wonder how much they've taken Welsh into their bosom and how they would feel about him doing the whole American thing, which I have to say, I did find the American voice quite convincing. It didn't jar too much.
No.
I found it quite convincing, but I found it quite grating after a while as well.
It really
got on my nerves.
This was a punishing novel. That's why I said earlier, there's something sadistic about this book.
For sure.
I did feel like Welsh was wanting to punish me, punish her, punish everyone who came into contact with her. It was
And I think that's why the neat tied up in a bow at the end resolution to all kind of bothered me so much.
Something that came totally out of left field for me, I was reading up just some reviews on the book before coming in, and I think it was The Independent that said in their review that at the heart of the book, what it really was about, really truly, was about the failed American dream. And that just caught me totally off guard. So I was wondering if you guys agreed or if you thought that that came through at all.
The only thing I can think of is the American sort of notion of the self as a kind of project, always bettering yourself.
Mm. And self-improvement.
About how actually, you know, that's just a veneer, and underneath it all is a kind of, you know, rampant narcissism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was really present in this book. Mm. It's quite an anti-American book. It's an anti-everything book, really. It's a very negative portrayal of modern American culture, really, isn't it?
Well, I think you're right. It's that no matter how much you improve yourself, you're still the same person underneath, and you've still got your same damages and imperfections going on underneath.
It's true. You sort of think about who comes out on top in this book, and like we were saying, you know, either Lena nor Lucy come out as a particularly nice character that you enjoy. I feel, I don't know, like maybe communication is the only positive thing. There's some communication near the end that sort of resolves some issues for people, but nothing else. Everything else is basically like, it's still rubbish. You know, fitness is rubbish. Overeating is rubbish. Art is rubbish. What's good? I don't know.
And even the communication, if it's what I'm thinking about, the email communication with Lena's mum.
Oh, yeah.
Without saying too much. It's all done out of such hatred.
It's true.
To begin with. And then, but suddenly it makes everything all right, which, you know, is...
Yeah, it was quite unconvincing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Irvin Welsh sleight of hand thing, it hasn't worked for any of us, but I do think that there will be lots of people who will love the way the story is wrapped up. Mm-hmm. I dipped into a few reviews as well, and it's always quite shocking, isn't it, when you've really disliked a book and then you go and read the reviews and that... full of people saying this is Welsh at his best.
Yeah,
he hasn't written this beautifully for years. This novel fizzles and crackles with energy. Mm. And then you're thinking, oh my God, really? Did we read the same book? But actually, then I sat and I thought, well, I did kind of devour this book.
Yeah, it's a very compulsive read in the way that, you know,
it really fits with all of that stuff about, you know, compulsive eating. And you do feel exactly as if you've eaten McDonald's for a week at the end of this book. You know, you feel queasy and your stomach's turning, but at the same time, you know, you quite want to go back for just one more cheeseburger.
Yeah.
So that's about all we have time for today. But obviously the discussion doesn't have to end here. So if anyone listening has any comments or thoughts they'd like to add about the book today, they can do so on our webpage, our Book Talk webpage on scottishbooktrust.com, Scottish BK Trust on Twitter, or on our Facebook page. If you'd like to find out more about our guests, you can head to Barry.
BarryHutchison.com, my website. That's Hutchison, not Hutchinson, which everybody always writes. Or just Barry Hutchison on Twitter.
Fab and Tidra.
I am at Chit Girl on Twitter, and that's Chit Girl in the Riot Girl sense. That's G-R-R-L.
Book Talk will be back in a couple of weeks with Ryan Van Winkle, who will be bringing you the latest interviews from the book world. And then after that, Paul Gallagher will be spearheading a panel on Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch. So we'll see how that holds up. Thanks so much to our guests again, Chitra and Barry, and thanks for listening, and happy reading.